What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. I am Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. And Dwayne, I mean, we always have fun. We always enjoy this show. It's always great to get together and chat every week. But today, it's kind of a special one, right?
Yeah, man. We were just chatting a little bit before the show. Trevor and I both come from PFF. And I think I podcasted with pretty much everyone at PFF. And for whatever reasons, our paths just never crossed. But I always, always, always love Trevor Sikkema's work. So super excited to have him on to talk wide receivers.
Absolutely. He is the lead NFL draft analyst over at Pro Football Focus, a man of many talents, a jack of all trades, a gentleman of leisure, all of those things. We're glad to have him on the show to talk some pre-draft stuff. Trevor, man, thanks for stopping by. How are you?
Marcus, Dwayne, it's so good to be with you guys. I appreciate you having me on the show. Yeah, like Dwayne was saying, man, it was like we must have just really missed each other when it came to the content that we were doing over at PFF. Because when I heard I was popping on with you guys, I was like, oh, yeah, this would be great. A podcast with Dwayne before he's getting. Wait a second. This is my first time actually doing a podcast with it. So I'm excited to chop it up with you guys. This will be fun.
Absolutely. Glad to have you on. I know this is a busy time of year. You were sort of joking before we started that you're on about three shows a day as you go on and, you know, kind of spread the word about how you're feeling about some of these guys. So, I mean, that leads us to the first sort of obvious question. When you're evaluating wide receivers, we really want to talk about the wide receiver position with you. What is your process for looking at those guys? I mean, how do you identify who's going to be big and who's a guy that maybe goes bust at the next level?
Man, it's, you know, not to have a cop-out answer, but there's just so many different ways to win at the wide receiver position. And what's really fun for me as an evaluator is as the NFL has kind of evolved and expanded and we see more skilled players coming into the league and coming through college football and, you know, we're getting 3, 4, 5 wide receivers on the field and there's just all of this power of the passing attack. It's so much fun identifying how a player wins. And I would say that's where I start with that process, identifying, okay, tell me the height and weight, first of all, okay? Like, how is this guy built? And then tell me exactly what they do well, how they win at the college level, and how much of that I think is translatable to the next level, right? I mean, wide receiver positions are a little bit ambiguous, right? I think that offensive coordinators are very creative in how they set these guys up. But still, you got guys who are more of your traditional X wide receivers who are going to be on the line of scrimmage. They're going to be going up against press coverage more. Well, okay, I want to see some size, some strength from you. What's the hands like? What's the hand speed like? Can you get off of press coverage? Can you hand fight? Are you pretty good at contested catches? Because if you're going up against press a lot, there's a good chance that you're just going to have a corner in your hip pocket a good amount of the time. How are you at the sideline? Because often those X receivers are the guys who are playing right outside the numbers, and you're going to have to play near the sideline and have a good conscious awareness of all that stuff. Are you a vertical player? You know, do you win when it comes to that vertical speed? Are you more of an in-breaker? Are you yards after catch kind of a guy? So that's kind of the X molds that you have. You got more of the flanker players that'll be off the line of scrimmage. So they don't have to be as good against press, but still, you want to see them be able to work that. You want to see them have good footwork, a variety of different releases. Can you get off of press coverage with that space, create that separation, get even with these players, and again, get vertical, stretch the field, really put stresses on them. And the guys from the slot, you want to see, once again, that foot quickness for sure, but the route running nuance. How are you setting things up? Do guys recognize that a corner is playing inside versus outside leverage? Are they playing straight up against him? Do they have these? Do they have a good feel for where zone coverage is going to be? What's the separation percentile there? Can they feel those soft spots in zones? So for me, there's just so many different ways to answer that question of do I think a guy is going to make it or not? Because you kind of have to identify the archetype of wide receiver that they are, determine what they do well, and then first say to yourself, do they do these things at a high enough level that I think is translatable to the NFL? And if you can answer that question as yes, then you can go on to more of, okay, what are their detractors? Are there things that they don't do well? And will those hold them back from achieving those strengths at the NFL level? And so there's so many different ways that I think that we try to evaluate that at PFF. I do a lot of film work watching these players, but we've got a lot of good advanced data as well. Separation percentile versus single coverage, yards per route run, which shows you how much you're emphasized in the offense, yards after catch per reception, which kind of grades out how much of a playmaker you are. And so each one of those analytical data points, you wait a little bit more or less depending on, again, how you see this player winning. And so it's a large process, like a wide scoped process for wide receivers as a whole. but you get to narrow it down a little bit more as you see these players and how big they are, how fast they are, how they win. And I think that's the fun part of evaluating where you see guys winning at the NFL level and how much.
Man, I love that answer because it's so nuanced and it is hard. Like, I mean, I work on the data side of it a lot. Like, we've got a wide receiver supermodel that just went up. And I look a lot at PFF stuff, by the way. So you guys make sure you go check it out. The draft guide's up. It's got all that stuff that Trevor was just talking about, the percentile rates against man and zone. All that stuff is great. And I've really thought a lot about, like, how do you archetype these guys out? You use that word. And I've thought about that one a lot. Like, it may be really the ultimate way to run a model like this is to group them right into those buckets and then actually grade them based on that and have them on a different scale. But a couple of guys that really seem to be able to do everything are Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers. Marvin Harrison, probably, I got to add on the junior because Marvin Harrison Sr. was, you know, he was a badass. So we'll still call him junior. He's going to have to live up to that. But, like, I can't honestly think of a guy that was more highly lauded, like, that I heard about at such a young age, and then the hype just kept going. Of course, he lands at Ohio State, so that helps. And it was pretty much like a lock. This guy's the top guy. But here lately, like, there have been some people saying, you know, Malik Nabers is really good. Maybe he should be the first guy off the board. So just curious in your thoughts, Trevor, you know, is this just prospect fatigue with Harrison, or is there something potentially here and maybe Nabers should be the first guy off the board?
I love both these guys. And I know I'm not, you know, coming on this podcast breaking some news of saying that it is close, because it really is. But you go back to summer scouting, and that's when we really start to fully analyze a lot of these players and what they could do to improve in their final year of college football, as we assume that they're going to be in the next upcoming NFL draft. And when you looked at Marvin Harrison Jr., the evaluation was just so dang easy. It really was. I mean, I watched him the year before, and as a true sophomore, this guy's showing stuff that NFL starter show. I mean, like, you could have known that this guy had NFL bloodlines, even if you just took out the nameplate from the back of his jersey, had no idea what his name actually was. You'd be like, okay, this guy's, you know, family members either played in the NFL or he's got an NFL coach or something, because the variety of different releases. I mean, it's just, he wins so much. The thing about Marvin Harrison Jr. is he wins so many routes within the first like two or three steps. I mean, the way that he can manipulate the leverage that corners have, the space in between them and the safety, where the nearest help is, how he can speed up or throttle down depending on where the best separation and the best throwing window is going to be, not to mention the nuance that we have in the routes, the separation scores that I mentioned for him, 80th percentile or above in regular separation percentile situations, 80th percentile or above in single coverage situations, I mean, 94th percentile in yards per route run. I mean, this guy was just an absolute monster in everything that you wanted to see from an underclassman wide receiver going into the year, because I felt like I had to have something to say about him to improve this year. I said, okay, well, he wasn't a big yards after catch guy as a sophomore, right? I mean, it was more of a contested catch player. They used him at the sideline a lot. Well, they used him on all sorts of, you know, drag routes over the middle, quick slants. They gave him those opportunities this year to be a yards after catch guy, and that drastically improved from him. And he was able to showcase those kinds of things. So it's hard to nitpick. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. He's probably going to have a top five film score of any position all time for me. When I say all time, it's like 7 years that I've been kind of like keeping track of these guys and how well I have them graded on film. But it's just hard to find too many flaws. Now, all of that to say, the floor for Marvin Harrison Jr. and the ceiling incredibly high. But anybody that wants Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison Jr., I can buy it if they sell it to me the right way. And the way that they would need to sell it to me is Malik Nabers moves at a different level than anyone else in this class, Marvin Harrison Jr. included. I have watched some of the best of Malik Nabers when it comes to those separation situations, when it comes to how he is setting up his defenders. The vertical stuff, I think, speaks for itself in that offense. But the way that Malik can change direction, yet not only maintain his speed, but also speed up, reminds me, and I hate doing comps this high, but I don't really know many other examples. Antonio Brown, when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Mm. Think about how uncoverable Antonio Brown was. And it wasn't because he's the biggest guy. It wasn't because he's the fastest guy. It's because somehow Antonio Brown perfected how his body and his athleticism ran routes to where the separation and the throwing window was always there, always. And he understood how to manipulate the coverage and combine it with those things. And you see flashes of that in Malik Nabers. And so I don't think it's, I mean, it might be a little bit of prospect fatigue because it's natural, but if you sold me on Malik Nabers with that as your point to say nobody moves like he does, I could tell you, all right, I buy it. I could get why you would draft him over Marvin Harrison Jr. I still have MHJ as my wide receiver one, but Malik Nabers is very, very close. They're number two and number four overall on my total big board.
So get this, Trevor, the supermodel just released. People can check it out over on fantasylife.com for free. And I have the last 5 years of prospects in there. And these two guys, grade number one, Marvin Harrison Jr., and number three, Ja'Marr Chase is number two. So like everything you're saying, I'm like, and I'm with you, man, watching him. Again, I'm not a film expert like you. Like, I watch a lot of film. I'm probably better than the average guy off the street, but I'm not you. But when I just turn them on, there is something different about Malik Nabers and the way he moves. There's just an edge to it. So yeah, I love that. Great breakdown.
So we got Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top. We got Malik Nabers. I mean, they're sort of battling for the top spot, depending on who you are and what you value. The name you hear right after them is Rome Odunze. And when you look at Odunze, where do you stack him behind those two? How close is he to Harrison and Nabers at this point?
Extremely. You know, when, again, going back to my big board, got Marvin Harrison Jr. as my number two overall player. Malik Nabers is my number four. Rome Odunze is my number six, right? I have all of these guys in the top 10, and I might change it a little bit. You know, there's some defensive guys that I might move up a little bit, but I cannot see Rome Odunze not being in my top 10 receiver. So he is also fantastic. And honestly, man, poor Rome Odunze, because if he was in basically any other draft class, he's probably wide receiver one, and he's pretty much
he would have been number one last year, right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, by a country mile, he would have been number one. I mean, we wouldn't even been having debates. Basically, I think you would have to go back to the Ja'Marr Chase season to say, okay, you probably take Ja'Marr Chase over Rome Odunze, but my goodness, so many other years, this guy would have been a wide receiver one. And again, going back into summer scouting, I was a little bit lower on Odunze than a lot of my other colleagues that are in the draft space. And the reason why is because I got the hype. Hey, 6'3", 212 pounds. I mean, like, he moves incredibly well, very smooth, great body control, has the ability to run so many different routes. It can get vertical, has that speed to get vertical. But what was lacking from his game in 2022 was that contested catch consistency. And even though you don't always have to be a good contested catch player, when you are 6'3", 215 pounds, I want to see you go up and get it a little bit, right? I mean, like, you've got the size. You know, when you talk about, oh, look at how great Rome Odunze is as a big athlete, I see the athlete part. I also want to see the big part, right? I want to see you be the best of both worlds, if you will. It's not just the size thing. It's also how you play. And I felt like he was not as reliable, not as strong at the catch point in those contested catch and contact situations, no matter where it was, sideline, over the middle, what it was in 2022. 2023, I don't know if he listened to my podcast episode or somebody else wrote about it that he heard about or what, but he took that to heart and he was so much better at contested catch situations. In fact, he was one of the best in college football this past year at hauling in those contested catches. And so to me, then all of a sudden I go, man, okay, now you've got a very well-rounded profile. I've seen basically everything I need to see with you. Again, the reason why I say poor Rome Odunze is just Marvin Harrison does basically everything just a little bit better. And then Malik Nabers has the plus movement skills that Rome's just not going to be able to match. And so that's why you see a really, really talented player at wide receiver three and probably pick towards the back end of the first round, where in a lot of other years, he might have been a top five lock.
So Odunze, Harrison, Nabers, all top three locks. You pretty much see that as consensus, you know, across most analysts, most drafts, and for good reason. But after that is kind of where the public sentiment like kind of diverges, right? It's like, okay, now it becomes more about, you know, who each analyst has as their favorite. And, you know, there's a group of names that seem to be together, but the order of them is not always the same. So once those three guys are off the board, which direction are you heading? Who's the guy after that that you're pretty much like, this should really be the fourth wide receiver in the 2024 NFL draft?
So I feel like I could have a different answer for you today. I could have a different answer for you tomorrow. Could have a different answer for you Friday. I think as the ultimate cop-out answer, I would say that this class is talented enough to where I think there's a bucket of guys that are next that could all ascend to be that next best wide receiver in that class. First one in that bucket is Malik Nabers' teammate, Brian Thomas Jr. Now, Brian Thomas is primarily just a vertical type of receiver right now. You know, nine routes, some comebacks, some posts, but he's not like running the whole receiver tree for you. He's still got to work that out, but 210 pounds, guys are on a 4.33. I mean, that don't happen very often. And I think you see that. I mean, I think he's got the strength to get off of press coverage. And then when he wins with his hands and his feet off the line of scrimmage, all of a sudden, if he gets even with a corner, we saw it at the combine. We saw it in his film. The guy's absolutely gone. So he is somebody who I think if you believe that he can be more than a vertical receiver, which I think is in the cards for him, I'm hesitant to say exactly how much, but I think he can be more than just that vertical receiver. Then I can see you putting him at number four in this class. I also think a very polarizing player is Adee Mitchell from Texas, who I would put in this conversation. I liked Adee Mitchell a lot coming into the season. I had him as my wide receiver five when we went through summer scouting. And the reason is because even with some of the limited film that we saw at Georgia with him as a freshman and as a sophomore, although he missed a lot of time his sophomore year due to injury, the touchdown percentage from this guy was consistently high. And the way that he moved at his size, the fluidity at his height and weight was just pretty rare. The way that he was able to get off the line of scrimmage, the way that he was able to break on his routes, again, it's just some special athleticism, some special flexibility and agility. Now, his production is kind of all over the place. And in fact, I would say that the people that bet on him are betting more on that potential than they are what they saw over the last couple of years. But to me, I'm a sucker for that kinds of stuff, right? Like even if you were used seldomly, if I see you presenting pretty rare traits, if I see your offense prioritizing you in the red zone and when they need a touchdown, like that's something that means a lot to me. So I think he's in that conversation. I really like Troy Franklin from Oregon. I think that he is an underrated wide receiver in this class. He could end up being wide receiver four because he's got the vertical ability. I think he wins consistently vertically. But what I love a lot about Troy Franklin is he becomes a playmaker after the catch. When he gets the ball in his hands, he becomes a ball carrier, man. He wants to make you miss. He wants those yards after the catch. And that's not always the case with receivers. Some guys just want to catch it, haul it in. Okay, I'm getting tackled. Let's go to the ground. Let's live the fight another down, if you will. Troy Franklin's like, all right, I'm going to take this bad boy as far as I could possibly take it. And, you know, they'll put him on slant routes and in-breaking stuff. You know, he's not just an outside of the numbers type of a vertical guy. They'll take him in the middle as well. I think a team's going to absolutely love that. If he goes to an offense that facilitates a lot of yards after catch opportunities, I think that he will absolutely eat. And then the final guy, it's a big wild card, is Ladd McConkey from Georgia. I mean, how much do you emphasize heavy volume potential, the two-way go assassin that he is? I mean, he was just absolutely cooking people at the Senior Bowl. He's cooked people over the last 2 years on his tape. He's one of the best route runners in this class, but also he gives you plus blocking for his size, and he's a lot better vertically than I think he got credit for earlier on in his career. My comp for him is one that, okay, the body types are a little bit different, but I think his style is like Eddie Royal from Virginia Tech, right? Eddie Royal was somebody who
Eddie Royal would
block his to get on the field, right? And I think that that's what Ladd McConkey will do pound for pound. I thought they were strong guys. They're really nice in the slot when you put them in quick hit situations, but also Eddie Royal and Ladd McConkey, man, they can open it up and they can get vertical if you're not prepared for it. So those are four guys that I think are in that next tier, that next bucket of who could be the top player in this class for those reasons.
All right, so we got all those guys. Now there's some other guys that maybe are a little more interesting, I guess, for lack of a better term. And one's going to get your rapid fire take, because a lot of times landing spot will determine how much success a guy has at the NFL level. So I got four names for you, and give me your best preferred landing spots for them. First, Xavier Worthy. Where's a good spot?
Patrick Mahomes. No, I mean, but like, honestly, like I think that just an offense that is not afraid to truly open it up. So like genuinely, like obviously I think the Chiefs would be great for him. We've seen that in mock drafts before. I think Buffalo would be a great spot for him as well, right? You're losing Gabe Davis. You want to keep the vertical part of that offense open. I think Buffalo is a good spot. And then the other one that I'll throw out there is Indianapolis, right? If Indianapolis maybe goes like a Brock Bowers or corner in the first round, if they have the chance to draft Xavier Worthy in the second round, you know, upgrade from what Alec Pierce has been for them. Then you got Xavier Worthy, you got Josh Downs, you got Michael Pittman Jr. That's a really nice trio there. So I'd say those three teams for Worthy.
Keon Coleman, whose stock seems to be dropping by the day.
Man, Coleman is interesting because I think you look at his separation percentile and it's terrible against single coverage. So you kind of got to go with who's just going to go up and like throw you the football. Like who's going to give
Favre still play?
Yeah, right. And I look at, I mean, like so honestly, I don't think they're going to draft him, but like I look at Philly, right? Like Philly's an offense where they're not afraid to go just like let AJ Brown go up and get it, right? They're not afraid to let, you know, Devontae Smith go up and get it. So I wonder if like Philly is a decent spot there. Pittsburgh, kind of, right? Russell Wilson loves the moon ball, loves the deep ball. Let him go up and get it, right? We had the DK Metcalf connection there for a little bit. So I wonder if that one as well. Those are the two teams that that pop into my head for where Keon Coleman could fit.
Yeah, we need Jameis to get a starting job again somewhere.
That's true.
Jameis will throw it. He will throw it to you, whether you're open or not.
Doesn't matter. Ricky Pearsall, where's a good spot for him?
Oh, man. I like Ricky a lot. What would be a good spot for him? I think Cincinnati would be a really good spot, right? Like depending on what happens with T. Higgins, but you know, basically that slot wide receiver spot, they haven't brought back Tyler Boyd. It's just Trent Irwin that's there right now. So I think like that could be a really good spot for them. Trying to think of some of these other teams that might need that type of a receiver. Baltimore kind of already has that. Kansas City kind of already has that. Maybe New Orleans. I think New Orleans could also be a decent spot for them, right? I mean, like you look at a situation where Chris Olave is kind of a do-it-all player for you. Rashid Shaheed is going to give you that vertical threat. Maybe you can get Ricky Pearsall to sort of be a do-it-all. I don't want to just, you know, confine him in the slot, but like he could be a great slot option for you as well. So he could be pretty interchangeable, I think, with what Chris Olave does. So I like that landing spot as well. So I think that those are the teams that stick out to me the most there for him.
All right. And last one, Malachi Corley, whose name has been generating a lot of buzz recently.
So the reason why, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Corley because I'm honest with the fact that he still has a lot of work when it comes to the nuance of playing the wide receiver position to really succeed. Really great after the catch, former running back. And the second he gets the ball in his hands, he turns into that running back, right? And I love that about him. But even at the Senior Bowl, when they were going through, you know, like the warm-up drills, kind of like before practice begins, you got the wide receivers, they're like, you know, going around the cones and all this kind of stuff. And they're trying to like match their feet up with like when they're cutting. Corley had to go again on some of those drills just because he doesn't have it down. It's not muscle memory for him yet. If it can be, he can be great yards after the catch guy. And I will say this too, shout out the new kickoff rules because all of a sudden vision, yards after catch type of mentality and play style could be huge for a kick returner. So I think that Malachi Corley could be good in that regard, but oh man, where would he be good? Somewhere where they're going to be able to get him the ball quickly.
It definitely feels like you've got to have a coordinator that's willing to scheme it up.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I wonder if like LA could be a spot. I mean, I know they are obviously already got like Nacua and Cooper Kupp, but you know, they're again, not afraid to get those schemed up touches with those guys. Like, I wonder if like Miami's probably the same thing, you know? Yeah. Does he run a fast enough 40? I think is probably the prerequisite for Miami, but I think like that's, oh, here's one that I could like a lot. Arizona, right? You move on from Rondale Moore. Mm. Like, I think that Rondale Moore, they kind of wanted him to be this type of receiver. Had him run a lot of routes last year, just didn't give him the football. If they want to try to replace that, I think they could go that direction, but maybe they moved on from Rondale Moore for a reason. But those are a couple of landing spots that I like.
It seems like people just immediately think Debo, but I'm with you. Those were two very different players. Like, I looked at him a lot, like in the supermodel. And honestly, you know, Debo, his A dot in college was 9.1. So he could at least attack like the intermediate area of the field. Like, if you go back and you look at all these guys that had high percentages of manufactured touches, low A dot, were rarely lined out wide. Here's the comp list. And I don't think he's going to get the same draft capital as a lot of these guys, but Kadarius Toney, Rondale Moore, Paris Campbell, and Amari Rodgers. So it's like, and those guys were probably all better than him.
Like, and here's the thing. Over the last like 2 years, we throw around the Debo comp all the time.
I know.
Debo does not get enough credit at this point for the route runner that he was coming out of South Carolina. Like, Debo was not just this like, oh, we can only get him the ball on screens and in the flat. Like, yeah. I remember I was at
he played senior, wide 84%.
Dude, so, I was like, at the Senior Bowl that Debo was at, and he was cooking fools with whenever he was in one-on-one situations. And it's like, so I had to get that off my chest. We are not giving Debo the respect that he deserved as the route runner that he was coming out of college. And so when I see people again talk about Corley, I get the yards after the catch part, but the before the catch is very, very different from what Debo was from what Corley is coming in.
Yeah, no, Debo became this version of Debo mostly out of necessity a few years ago with the 49ers having some injury. He's flourished in the role, but that was not the role I think they intended for him when they originally drafted him. Trevor, this has been great. We could probably talk to you all day. I know you probably have like three other podcasts lined up that you have to go and pop on, but we appreciate your time. Let folks know where they can find your stuff.
Sure, yeah, PFF.com. If you guys aren't a subscriber, now you can become a subscriber, 30% off, 30 MDS, that's the promo code. And you can get the draft guide. That's what I'm trying to promo here is all the trait breakdowns, the film breakdowns, the strength and weaknesses, the player comps. Like Dwayne was saying, that advanced PFF data, it's all in there. We've got 200 players in the draft guide right now. We're trying to get to 250, 275 before draft weekend kicks off. So if you have a PFF subscription, go download it now. If you don't, go sign up for one.
Absolutely. Hey, appreciate your time, Trevor. Enjoy the rest of draft season, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, this college basketball tournament has been one for the books with big plays and even bigger wins. The tournament might be nearing the finish line, but there's still time to get your bets in. We've teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook, and right now, all new customers who bet just $5 will instantly receive $150 in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our code DEBRIEF. The crown is yours. That's right. New customers can bet just $5 on anything and receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action and use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. Combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and more. If sports betting is not yet available in your state, no worries. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have the shot to win cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers, use our promo code DEBRIEF and bet just $5 on any wager. Get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code DEBRIEF only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Thanks again to Trevor Sikkema for stopping by. You can go follow him on Twitter if you don't already, at Tampa Bay Trey. That's T-R-E. Lots of good stuff there. And like he said, if you have not subscribed to PFF, subscribe to PFF. Go check out the draft kit. A ton of great stuff going on right there. But Dwayne, you mentioned it before. The rookie supermodel is out right now. Folks can kind of dive in there. The wide receivers are up and available for everybody. Which is why we wanted to have Trevor come on and talk about some of these wide receivers. There are a few guys that he kind of touched on that I know you and I wanted to kind of dive in on a little bit more. Let's start down in Texas, down in Austin, the University of Texas, a couple of guys who are getting some buzz. Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell. I know for you, the supermodel loves one of these guys way more than it loves the other.
Yeah, and so just so folks know, like, we're going to be releasing this in tiers, but the tool is up and we've included the last five classes now in the supermodel. Had a lot of feedback last year. Hey, can we get like the other, the years before in there? And so we've done that. So now you've got the 2024 class all the way back to the 2018 class and you guys can compare them. And yeah, the supermodel does like one of these guys more, and it's not the guy that we just talked about with Trevor. And the guy that, look, NFL teams, I think, agree with Trevor. Like, this is the guy they're looking at with A.D. Mitchell. He's got that upside, right? I think a lot of people look at him and they see the ceiling because of what Trevor talked about, the way he moves. The challenge is, for someone that is as athletic as he is and moves so well, Marcus, you still have to ask the question, then why didn't he ever really produce? So his adjusted career receiving yards per team pass attempt, and guys are like, oh my God, that's a mouthful. Yes, it is. Think about it this way. It normalizes for the team. When we look at a receiving yards for a receiver, and we divide it by the team passing attempt, it helps us normalize because some teams don't throw the ball a lot. Some teams run the ball a lot. So we've got to normalize to look across all these college programs. But I adjust it based on their age because the earlier you post great scores there, the better it shows for future fantasy production. In fact, Marcus, If you're not good early, but you're good as a year 4 and 5 player, it actually correlates negatively to future fantasy success. So we really want to see guys break out earlier in their career. And that doesn't mean that they're a bad receiver in those final two seasons. It's also just telling you all the good wide receivers have already left and gone to the NFL, right? And they've already been drafted. So you got to think about how the signal comes in. But if he goes in the first round, he would be the lowest mark in the history of the supermodel in that metric to go. And it is the most important production metric in the model. It dominates the rest of them. So it also accounts for ADOT, quarterback play. We've put a lot of work into this to really try to, focus in on the true player, right? And not all the noise around them. It's never easy, but you want to hear his two comps, his two closest comps, Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Miles Boykin. MVS 31st percentile grade in this. Boykin was 16th percentile. So I mean, it's those are his two closest comps, and we've just not seen guys, even when they been taken in the second and third round, or even the first round, that have his profile. We haven't seen him do it. Doesn't mean that you can't, because all the things that Trevor just said are still true, and I totally get it. I think his best opportunity is to land somewhere immediately as a deep threat, Marcus, but I don't think he's gonna be a guy that's gonna dominate all the levels. I think he's gonna have to commit to his craft, and if he does that, I do think the athleticism there, all the things you would want, and so I get why people like the ceiling case. But I think right now, based on what the model says, this is a guy that he's getting overdrafted by the NFL and by fantasy managers. So at the end of the day, if he gets the first round cap, the draft capital, it gets the biggest score in the model. And we've adjusted that too now. So it's not just the pick, because we know picks are not linear. Basically, if you know what the Jimmy Johnson trade chart is for the NFL, Chase Stewart a few years ago, he actually went in and like modified that based on how players perform, based on where they're taken in the draft. And so we're now using that to actually say, here is what their draft pick was worth. And so it's actually, because it drops off a lot after the first pick, and it basically steadies out after round two. So it's penalizing guys less that we're taking in round 4 versus round 6, but it's going to penalize you more if you were the 4th pick versus being the 32nd pick in the first round, which is kind of what we're dealing with Mitchell. You can't just call him a first round pick. He's probably going to be at the end of the first round if he goes. Now, you mentioned Worthy. The model loves Xavier Worthy. Mm-hmm. If he had better draft capital, like he could really shoot way up the board. His adjusted career receiving yards per team pass attempt, 83rd percentile, way higher than Adonai Mitchell's. Mm-hmm. Career touchdowns per game index, also higher. Career targeted quarterback rating, also higher. And think about career targeted quarterback rating. I was surprised by how high of a signal this carried in the model. And at first I was going to leave it out. I was like, well, it's so much of it is yards, and we're already getting that and receiving yards per team pass attempt. But then you think about it, this is really more giving a guy credit once they're targeted. So it's more of an efficiency stat, and it graded out better than yards per route run as far as correlation to future fantasy success, graded out better than fantasy points per game in college. So it's the efficiency metric that's included for all of the wide receivers. And man, he scored well across all of these things. So whenever I look at a Xavier Worthy, man, the hit rate for a top 36 finish, 39% in his first 2 years, 25% to be a top 24 finish. And even without any draft capital in there, he grades out much higher than Adonai Mitchell. So I just think he's the superior prospect. And I know size is what's knocking him down the board for a lot of people, Marcus, and NFL teams. But he was super productive really early in his career. So, I mean, he just really did everything that you would want to do. And then he tested well. So I know he's small, but I think the league's changing in that nature. We've seen Tank Dell. We've seen Devonta Smith. We've seen these guys that are not, 200 pounds coming in and really having success. But I do think landing spot obviously is going to matter for Worthy. You have to have someone that does envision him as being someone that can play a full-time role. We don't want him to get too at-willed, if you will.
All right. I mean, you touched on it too, because I think the size difference between the two of them, right? I mean, you've got Worthy, who measured 5'11 by 165 pounds, had that blazing 40 time in Indianapolis, but then you put him next to Mitchell, who is sort of, for old school NFL guys who just sort of dream of big wide receivers, right? 6'2, 200 pounds. He's more of that kind of bigger body guy that I think scouts tend to kind of fall back on. And, I think Trevor mentioned is that the ceiling for Mitchell is high because you see him make these wow plays every once in a while. The question is, can he do it consistently? And I think that speaks to what the model is seeing, that he's a guy that, you know, for all the physical traits and for all these ceiling plays, I think the play-to-play consistency was sort of lacking, that he didn't get the kind of target share that, that you would have hoped for a guy like that. I also wonder, Dwayne, we talk about this wide receiver class and everybody's so excited. I wonder how much of that is pulling Mitchell up draft boards, because everybody just sort of has wide receiver fever, it feels like this year.
Oh, man, you just coined a new one. Wide receiver, right? That works.
Somewhere. So, yeah, so we'll see what happens. But very curious. I mean, I think to your point, though, because the league is changing and offenses are changing and how they use wide receivers is changing, maybe there is a more of a future for Worthy than there would have been, say, a decade ago in this league. Another name that Trevor mentioned that is getting a lot of interest is Ladd McConkey. I do love, by the way, that every time I see Ladd McConkey's name pop up on my Twitter timeline, it's always prefaced by the fact or you know, attached to the fact of, hey, let's not comp him to a white slot receiver. I think everybody's really going out of their way to not say that, which is why the Eddie Royal comp I thought was sort of interesting for Ladd McConkey. But what does the supermodel see in McConkey right now?
So McConkey struggles from an adjusted career receiving yards per team pass attempt. It's the 36th percentile, but like, he was better when you look at his career targeted quarterback rating index. And that's why these things are such a great balance, because he wasn't in a full-time role. Like, now people do need to realize, like, he didn't play in the slot all the time. He actually played out wide more than he played in the slot, but there was such a rotation, you know, at Georgia, and he's playing at a really good program. So all those things get baked in, like his teammate, production also gets baked into this. So if you play with other really good players, it gives you a little bit of leeway here. But the thing that like really impressed me with McConkey, and you heard, you know, Trevor really allude to it, it's that he's not just this underneath, oh my God, you hope he can run like a quick whip route, you know, and get open. And he's just going to get all these underneath targets. He's a guy that was able to work down the field. Like I mentioned, he lined up wide more than people think. 69% of his snaps were wide. So this is not just a slot guy. 11.6 average depth of target. So that's really good. If you look at the guys that have really been like, I don't want to say they're a fail case every time, but the guys that are in that 7 and below range, and I talked about it a little bit earlier when Trevor was on, it's really tough to hit. And that's just not McConkey. So when you look at his depth of target profile, which the model does, and it adjusts for all those things, he was 26%, you know, above. You know, his 26% was well above the 14% average for NCAA wide receivers. So he was getting targets behind the line of scrimmage, but he was also really good in the intermediate game, Marcus. 10 to 19 yards was his most targeted area of the field, and that helps bring that ADOT up. And when you look at the scouting reports on him, you hear people like Matt Waldman, Lance Zierlein, Trevor talk about the fact that he can uncover on all three levels. And then you look at the way he was targeted in college, and it tells you that he's getting targets all those levels of the field. So I really do like him. You know, he was really good against zone coverage, 25% targets per route run against zone. That is well above the NCAA average for guys that ran at least 250 routes back to 2014. So McConkey is a guy that potentially comes into a team, and the NFL plays zone 70% of the time. Yeah. So I think that's a really good potential thing for him in his arsenal. He had a 3.05 yards per route run against zone looks, which was one of the best in the class, even better than Maserati Marv. Of course, talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. there. I thought that was a hilarious thing when I started watching Marvin Harrison Jr.'s film, and all of a sudden I'm hearing Maserati Marv. I'm like, what? Maserati Marv? It tells you I didn't watch a lot of college football until I started scouting these guys, because I should have already known that. I understand. So, yeah, I do like Ladd McConkey. Again, like, it's not a perfect profile, but the fact that, you know, he was so good when targeted and he can really hit all three levels of the field, and the scouts or the film guys are all seeing the same thing, like to me, that's a big positive for him.
One of the things we talked to Trevor about was, who is his wide receiver for, right? We talked about Harrison and Neighbors and Odunze being the top three pretty much across the board. And then we asked him about four, and he admitted, look, it could change depending on the day. Right now, you've got Brian Thomas at number four. What's the supermodel saying about him?
Yeah, so he comes in at the 70th percentile, and then you have Xavier Worthy at the 59th percentile. Now, remember, this is including projected draft capital, okay? So Brian Thomas he would score a lot higher if he had broken out earlier. But again, the model takes into account the fact that he played at a really good program at LSU. So that boosts him. It also takes into account that because he played at such a good program that's so good for wide receivers, like the competition was high. So the way that the model looks at this, Marcus, is it looks to see what were your teammates' yards per team passing attempt. And if they were really high on the scale, well, then it converts that into an over or under expected version of that number. And that really helps out Brian Thomas because Malik Nabers was really good. And there've been other guys that, you know, he's played with even before Nabers. So when you look at Brian Thomas Jr., you know, he's a guy that, you know, Trevor mentioned it. He's got that deep threat ability. You know, he's got that expected draft capital going somewhere in the middle of the first round. Still really good though, even in the pre-draft model, which doesn't include any draft capital. Even in that version of the model, he would come out in the top five prospects in the class. So that's something I'm always looking for, are the guys that grade out really well ahead and the guys that grade out once you put that draft capital in there. But yeah, he's a guy that, and in the data, you know, Trevor, it was interesting what Trevor mentioned. I've watched, I don't know, I've probably watched Thomas for like an hour. Trevor's probably, you know, he's obviously studied him way more than I have, but he did get quite a few targets underneath. Now, to Trevor's point, he may not have that full route tree available to him to attack all of those areas of the field, but I kind of expected him to be more of just a deep threat, Marcus, and he wasn't. His 20% of his targets came 20-plus yards down the field. That's in line with the NCAA average, and 50% of his targets came between 0 and 9 yards. So he was getting those short targets. That was almost 20% above the NCAA average. So he's a guy that is basically, he goes deep, and he can work underneath. He's going to really need to work on his intermediate game because that's like where the bread gets buttered in the NFL. But given what a great athlete he is, the big plays he came through, this guy scored really well. The thing that helped him out the most in the model was his career targeted quarterback rating. It was in the 81st percentile. So one of the best marks in this class. So when you give this guy a chance, he's generally been really good.
I mean, I know you've talked about the methodology of this, and you sort of mentioned that you don't spend as much time watching college football because obviously we're locked in on the NFL. Were there any guys that you came in kind of expecting that they were going to test well and they didn't do well, or vice versa? Do you have any kind of preconceived notions that got blown up in this process?
Not necessarily. So it's kind of difficult because I put the best way that I can see that is in the pre-draft capital model. Because once I put draft capital in, it is the strongest input in the model. So essentially, it kind of shakes them out, like in close to the order they're going to go in the draft. So the formula, right, for the post-draft model is 60% goes to capital, 40% goes to the pre-draft model. So it's taking over a bigger portion of it. So it gets pretty close to what the draft says. But I love what the model does because it will split them a little differently, right, and give you a little bit of a different perspective. So when I really focused in on just looking at the pre-draft model, I think that's the easiest way to do this. And like Ladd McConkie did surprise me. Like he came out at almost the 60th percentile in the pre-draft capital model. I thought he was going to be a guy that, oh, well, once you add the draft capital in because he's moving up boards, that's really what's pushing him. But once like I put in all the inputs and, you know, figured out, hey, what are the things that matter most for future fantasy production? Ladd McConkie came out really well. Another guy that kind of surprised me. Well, we already talked about A.D. Mitchell. I didn't know a lot about him coming in, but he graded out even lower than I expected, especially given where his draft capital was going to be. But another guy that came in really low was Ricky Pearsall. And I wasn't necessarily surprised because he didn't break out until he was older. But I think it's an interesting question. You know, Ian asked me about it, Marcus. You know, how much is this COVID year counting? Because we had a lot of guys that went ahead and, you know, took the extra year that they got from COVID. Now, you have to also couch that with, there are guys like Ja'Marr Chase that didn't. Like, they skipped COVID year and then still came out because they were eligible and were awesome right away. First year in the NFL. Obviously, not most prospects are not on the level of Ja'Marr Chase. So he's a bit of a, you know, a unicorn in that way. But it is interesting to see how that's going to impact guys, because Pearsall is a guy, he never truly had like that huge receiving yards per team pass attempt, but all of the scouts gush about this guy. So I worry about him now that I really like got into the model, because he comes out in the 43rd percentile in the pre-draft model, which historically is not, it's not been terrible. Doesn't mean you don't have a chance to hit, but it's not been great. And with all the buzz around him, I just, you know, I guess I did. First of all, I didn't know he's a fifth year senior when I was hearing the buzz. Mm-hmm. So I got in and started studying them. I knew pretty quickly he probably wasn't going to do as well. But verse on expectations when I started, I would say Ricky Pearsall is one of those guys.
So the supermodel is out now. You can start diving into some of those things. You wrote up the tier five guys, right? And the schedule, the rest of them are coming in order, correct?
Yep, they'll be coming out each day this week. So tier five's today. Tomorrow you'll get tier four. Then we will do tier two and three. And then finally at the end of the week, you get tier one. So we'll kind of work our way backward. But you know, all the things I talked about here, I tried to include, you know, in the model. We didn't release it all at one time because it's 10,000 words. And you know, people probably wouldn't scroll that far, but want to be able to let you kind of break it down into more digestible pieces, but something you can always come back and refer to. And I also go into way more depth about how the model works, why it works the way it does, correlations, all that kind of stuff. So if you're into the, hey, Dwayne, just tell me how this model really works, because I don't know if I want to trust it. And so that kind of information is all in there as well.
Absolutely. And go play with the supermodel. It goes back a number of years as well, so you can do some comparisons between this year's draft class and some guys in previous draft classes to kind of get a sense. You can kind of predict, or hopefully predict, maybe what some of these guys will do. It's never 100%, but you know, kind of gives you an idea of kind of how some things are going. So plenty to talk about, and we will dive into plenty more as the weeks go on. We are less than a month from the NFL time. Draft.
Yep.
About 3.5 weeks from the NFL draft kicking off this year. So we still have plenty to talk about, but it is coming in a hurry. So that's a good spot, though, for us to pause for this week. Again, big thanks to Trevor Sikkema for stopping by. Be sure to go check him out both on Twitter and over at Pro Football Focus. Plenty of good stuff over there. And go check out our rookie supermodel over at fantasylife.com. Sign up for the newsletter while you are there as well. Free 99 comes to your inbox every single day. In the meantime, that'll do it for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Thanks to Matt LaMarca, Matt Swing for helping us put this thing together today. For Dwayne, I am Marcus. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Enjoy the week, everybody. Talk to you again real soon.